the American Heart Institute, and he told her, we have to do an arteriogram before the surgery, and that's a test where they put dye into your veins to see where your circulation is. He told Christine, who is Corey's mom, there's usually a one in 5,000 chance you're going to have difficulty during the test. But because you have a heart problem, it's a one in 500 chance you'll have difficulty during the test. She came home and told her son it was a 500 to 1 chance she was going to die during the test. So he thought his mother was scheduled to die next week in the doctor's office. We never let her go to the doctor's office alone anymore. We take her because she awfulized everything. We do a lot of work out of town. And when we fly out, she always tells us what the weather is, where the storms are, the latest plane crash. We hear all that before we leave. So it's always the worst. So he learns that. He learns that everything's absolute worth, no matter what it is. And my side of the family is that we don't deal with anything. My brother killed himself when he was 21 years old, and he was the oldest child, and we didn't even talk about it. So we didn't do the pain at all. We never learned how to grieve. My mother died on the couch slowly. We never talked about it, so we didn't do any grieving there. One of my younger brothers is anorexic, and he almost died. Ended up 2 years in the state hospital, and we just don't talk about it. So we don't talk about anything. In fact, my father still will say, why do you want to talk about it if it's painful? So he still doesn't do any dealing with pain. He just takes Valium. So when he has his stress. So Curly and I will sit down to talk about anything. Like he'll want to say, Barbara, I need to tell you that we don't have enough money to pay the APS bill. And he'll say, you know what? I bet they turn the electricity off tomorrow. I bet we will lose our house. We'll be on Skid Row. And I say, let's go to the movies. And that has happened to us probably 500 times in the last 9 years that we've been together because he needs to deal, but it's so bad, and I don't even want to talk about it. You can imagine if we have something to deal with, especially if he wants to confront me on my behavior, and I'm saying, I don't want to talk about it. So we've had a lot of trouble. Now we really talk about it. I'm going to talk to you more about how we do that in our recovery. But those are some of the things that happened to us. And see, we thought we were being adults. He was 40 and I was 37. And see, we thought we were being adults and just talking to each other. And we had no idea why we were fighting and fighting and fighting. And it's because he learned something different as a child than I learned how to deal. And no one ever told us how to be adults.
Barb was assistant director of a Crossroads, which is a men's three-quarter way house, for those of you that don't know. And I was the house manager at the Crossroads. Now, one of my issues, the big one I pointed up here, was abandonment. And everything Barbara did, I perceived at some level that she was going to leave me. And so I mounted huge control and anger issues to keep that from happening to me. Remember now, the Crossroads at the time had about 40 or 45 men there, and Barbara's the assistant director. And I would be in the office, in Bill's office, and I'd look out through the blinds like this, and I'd see Barbara out on the property talking to a man. And my head would start going on me. Why, I could have wrote a novel about what I thought was happening out there in that parking lot. I said, right now what she's doing is she's planning on leaving me, and she's going to run away with this guy, and then their life is going to be wonderful and beautiful, and they're going to have all the things that I have been capable of giving her, on and on and on and on through my head. So I keep my mouth shut and I wouldn't say anything, and I just sort of start getting real angry about that. And I'd go walking through the dining room and I'd see Barbara sitting down at a chair, and there's another guy sitting there, and Barb's talking to him. And I'd walk through and say, oh, I can't take any more of this. Look at what she's doing. I can't believe this. And she'd come in the office and she'd say, hi, how you doing? And I'd say, I was doing fine. This morning when I woke up, but I've seen you talking about 15 men around here. You know, what is it with you? How come you have to go out and search out these men to talk to? And she'd say, Curly, it's my job. It's what I do here. And I said, Barbara, you do your damn job too well. That's what you do. I know what you're doing. You like what you're doing. And on and on and on and on like that. she'd look at me and she'd say, "Curly, you're trying to control me." And I said, "Barbara, I'm not trying to control you. I just want you to be more responsible." And there's that word, responsible. So what I'm in right now here, up on the board, I have anger. That's what Barbara saw. What that anger was concealing was fear of abandonment. And what was underneath that fear of abandonment was shame. And when I'm talking about shame, I mean less than, dumb, stupid, inadequate, never will have a relationship, not capable of having a relationship. I'm a nerd, I'm a jerk, and I'm no good. Real fast, just like that. That's what I'm telling myself about myself. So that's what's going on. Barb came up to me one day and she says, "I am going to go up to Payson." And there's a lot, I want you to know there's a lot of self-disclosure here, and I still have some feelings about some of this. But she says, "I'm going up to Payson and visit my mom and dad." And I go, "God, you know, what is this stuff about quality time?" That used to be a real big thing with us back then. That's how I used to control, with the quality time bit. But I said, "Well, how about this quality time we're supposed to have? And you're going up to Payson to visit your mom and dad." Now, right underneath that, I'm thinking, you know, there's a firehouse up there. That firehouse is right down the corner, and I know there's firemen there. There's got to be single firemen there. And she's going to be on a walk, and she's going to meet one of those firemen, and then gone, it's gone. And I would say, get angry at Barbara, and Barbara's angry back at me, and she's saying, "Curly, you're trying to control me." And I'd say, "No, I'm not. You're not responsible." And I would do that when she would announce to me, "I'm going to an AA meeting." And I'd go, "Whoa, wait a minute. What meeting are you going to?" And she'd say, "Well, I'm going down there to that meeting in South Phoenix." And I'd think of a guy I knew that was down there, and I knew all about this guy, and I'd say, "She's going to meet that guy, and he's going to invite her for coffee. They're going to go for coffee, and during coffee, she's going to have all this limerence and all these wonderful feelings for him. And once again, I'm going to be in abandonment and in shame." And then I'd pipe up and say, "You know something about us? We never go to meetings together. Why can't we go to meetings together?" And we'd already made a decision to go to separate meetings because of our own recovery and stuff like that. Fear of abandonment, covering up, worthless, inadequate, dumb, stupid, embarrassed. I never will have a relationship, not capable of having one. Shame. A classic argument that we had also revolved around the crossroads. Barbara was my boss over there. And I want to assure you, there are whole other issues connected with Barbara being my boss. But on a real regular basis in those days, a cook used to get drunk. And when the cook got drunk, I used to hate it. Not so much that I had to fire him and try and get him in Lark or something like that. That meant I had to cook. And that is not what I like to do, is cook. And we had to fire a cook, and he went, so I had to cook dinner. Now, it was real simple, unless you're like I am, and I don't do cooking, but it was real simple. It was hamburgers, and I think I was going to put onions in the hamburgers, and I was going to make beans, and we're going to have this salad, and we're going to have something else. And I said, "Barb, what time do you think I should start dinner?" "I think I'll start about 5 o'clock. Would you help me make the salad at 5 o'clock? Time issue." And she said, "Sure, I'll do that." And she went off in the parking lot to talk to somebody else, you know, so I'm already set up for it. But I'm in there and I'm making hamburgers and I don't know how to turn the stove on, and I got to get somebody to help me turn the stove on, and all this stuff's going on. And I'm looking at my watch and it's 5:05, and pretty soon it's 5 o'clock and Barbara is not there. Now, I want to tell you, at that instant, whatever sanity link I had went at that time. Barb saunters in. To me, it seemed like 3 years after 5 o'clock. But in actuality, it was probably about 10 minutes. Okay, Barb comes in and she says, "Hi, how you doing? Want me to help you make the salad?" And she's smiling. And I said, "Barbara, you know, I just don't understand you. You know, why don't we just say, let's make the salad sometime this evening? And when we happen to meet each other, we'll meet each other and, you know, we'll do it. You know, I'm really, this time stuff's going on with me." And she said, "You know, there you go trying to control me again. And if you want the damn salad made, you make it yourself." And right away, I know she's going back to the parking lot or she's going to do something like that. And so what happened, and I'm sure nobody out here has ever had a fight like this, but I had a half cup of coffee in my hand. And she turned to walk away, and I took the coffee and I threw it on her right here. And she turned around and said some nice words to me, and I said some nice words to her. Now, that fight lasted 1 month over the crossroads. 1 month. I would go walking through the property, and you know, there's about 5,000 or so many people through there on a weekly basis, and somebody would see me and say, "Hi, Curly, how you doing?" I'd go pick up a smile on my face, and I'd say, "Fine, have you seen Barbara around here anywhere?" And I'd be looking for Barbara, and we kept trying to touch in to try and work it out, but what's happening is we're both still angry about what happened. Our boss at that time was Bill M., and we were sitting in his office, and he's the boss, and we're sitting in there, and we're arguing under the guise of trying to work things out, but we're still fighting is what we're doing, you know, and we're bringing up everything by this time. And Bill stuck his head in the office, and he said, "Hi, can I come in here?" And we both looked at him and said, "No, get out of here." And we kicked Bill out of his office, and the fight kept going on. Now, the way that fight ended, and I want to tell you, I'm going to be honest about this, I did not do this on purpose. But I said something to Barbara, and she got out of the office, and she started to go out the door, and I'm following close behind her, and that's what my abandonment issues do to me. I always follow close behind. You know, you're not going to get too far out of my sight. And my foot accidentally hit the door, and she hit her head like that on the door. And she sat down, and Barb started crying. And when Barb started crying, I started crying. And we sat there, and we held each other, and we just kept crying. Something happened. We went through the anger, I went below the abandonment, and we both got into the pain. It took us a month to hit the pain. I walked in the house one day, and I guess this was about 4.5 years ago, and Barbara's sitting there, and we had had one of our constant fights, and by now it's just constant fighting, and she has her support group that says that I'm out of my mind, and I have my support group that says she's out of her mind, and we're developing allies and all this. You know, we're bringing whole programs in on this stuff. And I walk in the house, and she's sitting there with another friend of mine, a woman named Linda. And I knew something's up. Okay, something's up, because they're staring at me, and they're like a little, I can sense fears going on in the front room. And Barbara says, "Curly, if you don't get some help for your codependency, I'm leaving the marriage." And now that immediately struck abandonment. Now, inside, I'm real angry, but I'm getting ready to lose something again, so I'm not going to own that anger. And what I said immediately was, "Well, gee, sure, what do you want me to do?" You know, like that. So she wouldn't leave. And she says, "I would like you to go to a workshop at a treatment center in the area in Wickenburg. And it's a week workshop, and because she had already worked there, I could go free." Now, for a year prior to this, Barbara has been coming home saying, "Curly, boy, it's about codependency and it's about shame." And I said, "Barbara, I don't want to hear that stuff. You're going crazy. They're brainwashing you. They're doing all this other stuff to you. You're losing your mind." And of course, I had my support group, and I could go tell them what she was doing, and they agreed with me. But now she's real serious. She is at the end, and the truth was, beneath my abandonment, I am also at the end. So I went up to the workshop. Now, I had about, at the time, I guess about 5 years of recovery behind me. And nobody is going to tell Curly anything about any of these diseases. And I'm laying for that counselor. I'm waiting for her to say one thing to me, and I'm going to tell that woman how it works real quick. So I went up there, and I'm waiting for her, and I'm real angry, and I'm waiting for her to say something about me. And then she said something to me I'd never heard before. She said, "Curly, I cannot believe the pain I feel coming off you." And nobody'd ever told me that before about pain. And I started crying Monday, and I started crying Tuesday, and I cried Wednesday, and I cried Thursday. I even came back into town a few times and told some of my old allies that I was in one hell of a lot of pain, and it was just a chance now, that it was me doing something in that relationship. That's the disease relationship. That went on for a number of years. Fighting, developing allies, destroying little by little, bit by bit, we chip away and we chip away until we chip away. Until finally, at this point, Barbara and I could look at each other and honestly believe inside that I did not like that person. Our friendship had gone at that time. So, with that, I'm going to give it back to Barbara, and we're going to talk about the turning point.
After Curly did that workshop, we were then working together at the Meadows. We keep working together someplace. And we were still fighting, but now the fighting became therapy fighting. I don't know if you've ever fought with a therapist before, but now we use therapy terms on each other. Like, go deal with your mother. Or, that's not about me, that's about you. And just on and on. So it accelerated and accelerated, and we were trying to work it out. We were trying to do it on our own, and we still didn't know how to take care of our marriage relationship. We were learning a little bit about our codependency recovery. The last argument that we had, Curly was in the den and I was in the kitchen. And he said, I hear that it's raining in Wickenburg. And I said, it is not snowing in Payson. And that started this huge fight. I mean, that's how our fights went. And that fight lasted for a real long time. We did the same things. We pulled out the cannons. We were really overwhelmed. Curly said, like I said, we were fighting all the time. And to make a really long story short, at that time his mom was in the hospital, and at that time we thought she was not going to live. She'd had a heart attack or brain leakage or something. And his dad had gotten sick, and he was in the hospital. Now they're both in the hospital together, and Curly has gone every single night after working every single day. And this is the fourth month this is going on. So guess who feels abandoned? I mean, I don't even know where he is, except when I see him at work. And then he's gone every night, and I'm fighting, and I'm feeling lost and abandoned and having all these feelings. And what I did is started getting my emotional needs met by me having an emotional relationship at work, which is, of course, not healthy. I started taking care of my needs elsewhere, and so he was abandoned. So here we are, both abandoned. And I woke up one morning and said, I am just dying here and I want out. And so this is how we were going to end another relationship. That is the way all the relationships go. I was going to end another one, and this time it was going to be my first divorce. And I was just going to leave because I didn't know any way else out. And what happened was Curly said, let's please go to therapy. And we went to therapy. And now it's kind of like a miracle happened to us. A wonderful thing started happening. And what really happened is this woman who we started seeing for therapy started putting tools in our toolbox. And we are going to give you some of those tools tonight, share them with you. And we don't have that much time left. We're going to run through some of the things that we learned. And what it did was it saved our marriage. And I could say today that I probably will do the death do us part, which I always had my foot out the door, so I had no idea what that meant. But today we have a 90% healthy marriage just because we did the things this woman told us. Kind of like what we did when we got sober. They said do A, B, C, and D, and I didn't know what they meant, and I did A, B, C, and D, and I stayed sober. So we're going to share with you some of the things that we did. One of the things that I had to learn, and I don't know if anyone else goes through this or not, but I had to learn that when Curly and I fought, that he wasn't my enemy. I mean, he became the Russian. We would start fighting, and instead of feeling those feelings of, I care for you and I love you, I said, I have to get away from this guy and I hate his guts. And the feelings were really strong. I don't mean small feelings. I'm talking about, I'm leaving this relationship. And I would say that to him over and over again. I would feel those feelings, and he was always the bad guy, and I couldn't stand it. I couldn't handle the pain of the fighting or any ability to try to change my behavior, of course. So I would leave. So what I've learned is that when we're fighting, I still have all those feelings, those codependent feelings of he's an enemy, I hate his guts, I never want to see the man again, I don't want to be married to him, because I know through experience of maybe 100 times that at some point he's going to be my friend again, I'm going to love him again, I'm going to be in love with him again, he'll be my friend. And that's what I have to do in my head, because the feelings won't match. And believe me, codependents are the only people that take something on and go with it, skew their thinking and go with it when it's not real. That's why we need people to tell us that our thinking is skewed. So my thinking gets skewed whenever I'm fighting with him because I really think he's the bad guy. So one thing I do is when we're not getting along, or I think he's hurt me, you know, he says something that's hurt me, or I feel that he's angry and I don't want to deal with it, or we're fighting about something, or I think I'm right and he's wrong. I do that a lot. I'm always right and he's wrong. What I do is I say to myself, I'm going to take action. I'm going to go to a meeting, or I'm going to call my friends, or I'm going to call my sponsor, or I'm going to go see somebody, or I'm going to leave the house. But I know that later he's going to be my friend, so I don't say anything. Because I used to say, I hate your guts, you know, on and on and on, and my mouth would go. So now I don't say a word. I just say, I'm leaving right now, and I know that that's going to change. And that has been remarkable because, you know, our feelings always change. You know, the good things and the bad things always change. So if I keep my mouth shut long enough, the feelings change and eventually the fight's over. Another thing that happens to us is Curly and I used to rage at each other, but one of us always started, of course. And I'm just going to talk about me because I'm the one that's sharing, but if Curly would start raging, what happened, of course, see, I go into fear and shame. I jump right in and I feel like I'm 4 years old. And that's only because my dad used to rage and I was a kid and I would feel fear and shame because I was a little kid. I still do that. I don't feel like an adult when he's doing that. I just feel absolutely panicked when he's yelling and raging and I feel shame. And then I go into anger to protect myself. And that's what starts the fight. So if I can leave the house and don't sit there while he's raging, it saves, you know, days and days of fighting or a lot of hurt. Because what ensues after that is really detrimental to both of us. So one thing that to really share with you is that it's not okay for someone to be raging at you or for you to be raging. And I've done both. I've raged at him and I have been raged at. But the suggestion is that, for example, if Curly starts raging, what I say to him is, this is not doing any of us, either of us any good, and I'm going to leave right now. And I'll be back, and see, I tell him when I'm coming back because he's abandonment. He's got abandonment issues. So I say, I'll be back in an hour. I'll be back in 3 hours. I'll be back tonight. And I'm willing to talk to you again about this. So I'm just don't leave him hanging, but it gives us time to cool down. Because I will not sit in the room with him yelling, and he should not sit in the room when I'm yelling, because that's when we start doing harm to each other. So that's a real big one, has been a big one for us. And it's helped us stop something that could be a fight into nothing. It just dissipates, and in an hour we both apologize and we're fine again. Another thing that I learned, and I don't know if the rest of you do this or not, but I had to start listening to him. I had to listen to what he was saying to me instead of defending myself. See, I'm real good at defending. He would start saying something to me like, and another thing I want to tell you, that when you went over to your brother's house, you said you were going to be home at 10 and you were be home at 3. That's 5 hours and you didn't even call me. And instead I'm thinking, what's the reason? What's the reason? Defend yourself so you make it all right so I don't have to be wrong. And instead I look at him and I try to listen to what he's saying to me. Because all we really need to do for each other is to listen to each other. We don't have to do anything about the behavior necessarily unless we're being offensive. See, I think I'm supposed to do something about what he wants. I have to always do what he wants. That's part of my thinking because I was trained to do what somebody wants me to do. So if Curly says, I'm angry because you're wearing purple, I don't have to go change into blue. I used to do that, but I don't anymore. I just look at him and say, I hear what you're saying to me. All I have to do is listen to him. And that's a big one. We could talk for hours about boundaries. But boundaries have probably been the single most important thing in my recovery with everybody, and especially with Curly. And what I mean about boundaries, the special thing about boundaries, and I know most of you have heard a lot about boundaries, but what I do, say for example, he's saying something to me, he's confronting me on something. What I do is I put my boundary up, what I think of as a shield in front of me. Some people use jelly glass jars, some people use circles of power, some people use barbed wire, glass. I mean, I've heard everything. I mean, I've heard lots of weird stuff, but whatever you feel like is in front of you, I think of like a shield right in front of me, dividing us, and I observe Curly like I'm watching a movie, so I can move back far enough so I can listen to him. So I try to listen, I look at his eyes, and if I'm really scared, because sometimes I am, especially if he's really angry because I'm afraid of anger, I look at his eyes or around his eyes and observe him. And I try to listen to exactly what he's saying to me, like I'm going to be tested on it. And a lot of you know what I'm talking about when I talk about disassociation. Those of you that know how to disassociate, especially if you've been physically abused, emotionally abused, or sexually abused, you will disassociate and you kind of daydream and you're not even involved in the conversation at all. Well, that's really not okay for you and your partner, because you need to be available and intimate with your partner. So what I do so I don't disassociate is I listen to him like I have to write down what he has said to me in the other room in 5 minutes. I try so hard to listen to him. And so I don't defend myself. I never say a word. I just listen to him and then I say, I really hear what you're saying. Because that's all I have to do. See, a lot of us in here think we have to change for our partners, but we don't. Unless we're being offensive and until we meet a compromise point. But I don't have to change everything for him. But see, I thought that before. I thought to be in a relationship, I had to change for him. So observing with your boundaries up is wonderful. And you don't have to do anything about it. Another thing that I've learned to do is I do not have to fix any of his feelings. I don't know those of you that think you're supposed to fix. When someone tells you they're in pain, you cram Kleenex in their face and you pat them and you tell them what they can do different. We don't have to do any of that. All we have to do is listen to someone's feelings, especially pain and anger and fear. We don't have to do any of that. Like if Curly's angry, I just have to listen to that. I don't have to fix his feelings. And those of you that are caretakers, like I'm a caretaker, or maybe the male in the relationship is supposed to take care of the wife, you don't have to do anything about what they're sharing. You just have to listen to them. I'm going to let Curly share some more and then I'll...
One of the first things that I had to do, that little support group of allies that I had, included in that support group of allies was a number of women that I used to almost immediately run to when Barb and I had a bad fight. Now, that dialogue that I would have with that person always came around to where Barbara was absolutely wrong. And I would get bolstered up about how right I was. What I had to do was develop a male support group. And within this male support group, I had to be able to trust these men where I could show them my feelings. Where I could say, I hurt. This hurts me. Or I feel a lot of shame right now. Or I'm afraid. Instead of the old support group that I had where I could say I'm angry and I'm right and that's that. And get reinforced on being angry and right and that's that. That's how I started changing. We developed something, Barb and I, and this was truly a gift from God that was given to us. A little exercise called No Defense. And what no defense is you sit down with each other, and we haven't had to do this in a while, but you'll sit down with each other and you'll hold hands and you can close your eyes or open your eyes, whatever you want to do. And one person starts and say, I start. What I do during no defense is I reveal to Barbara who I am and what I'm thinking. Not just the well stuff I'm thinking, not just the stuff I know I should be saying, and not just the program stuff, the very, very hidden, sometimes dysfunctional, thick stuff that's going on inside of me that was real scary for me to start talking about. And Barb has to listen. And when I'm finished, she can't reply. And then it's her turn. And she talks the way and talks to me about what she has to talk about, and there's no defense with that. And when we're finished, what we do is we'll pray, which leads to the next thing. One thing the people we work with and that we do that I really support the couples out here right now in doing is giving the relationship to God, doing a third step with the relationship and doing it together. I don't know if you pray or not together, but Barb and I do. I can remember when we first started praying together, and I still haven't worked through this all the way, but I used to feel a lot of shame doing that. I could pray in groups, what have you, but when Barb and I sat down alone and started praying, I used to feel a lot of shame about that. Once again, that's probably about revealing myself to her. It was real scary for me to do that. The last thing I want to talk about is this little guy that's been looking at you all night up here. This is Monroe. I want to introduce him to you. And he's not scared at all, I'll tell you that. Monroe came during a therapy session where we were advised to get a symbol of our relationship, that our relationship had been abused. Our relationship had been just as abused as Barb and I had been abused in childhood, and plus the abuse that we've done for ourselves. You can't see it too well, but he's wearing a Get Well Soon shirt. Now, when I had an issue, and I was sure I was right about this issue, I'd talk about it. And then Barbara would have her side, and she was sure she was right about this issue, and she'd talk about it. And then what we started doing was committing to unity. And the way we committed to unity is, what would the relationship think about that? And then we started putting words in Monroe's mouth, and Monroe started talking a little bit, and we started doing, under the auspices of committing to unity, what was best for that relationship. So we committed to unity. I support you in getting something like Monroe. We do a lot of precious child work, Barbara and I. I'm getting into some feelings right now as I'm talking about the precious child work. But Monroe has been just the most wonderful thing that has happened to our relationship. And he's angry. We used to put him up on the window in front of the car like that as we were driving to therapy sessions. And he'd be telling people to get out of the way and stuff like that. He's a pretty neat guy.
You know, along with what Curly was saying, the one thing that I was thinking about that was so strong in my mind is, you know, when you really want to be in a relationship with someone and you're thinking and hoping and dreaming that it's going to be wonderful, remember that that person is your friend. I mean, I forget that Curly's my friend a lot because we live together. He does things I don't like. I do things he does not like. And we get into our power struggle. And I had to remember that in a relationship, you know, nobody's right and nobody's wrong. We're just different. And when I realized that I had learned differently and I still think differently, and now I say to him, you know, I don't agree with what you just said. That's okay. We're going to agree to disagree. Those kinds of things, because for those of us, I don't know if your addiction's like my addiction, but I thought we were supposed to always get along. And I also, it was always a power struggle because of course I couldn't be wrong, because if I was wrong, I was always in shame. And I didn't like the feeling of shame. So I fought like hell to be right. So today I know that nobody's right, nobody's wrong, and I try to keep remembering that Curly is my friend above and beyond anything else, just like I have girlfriends, that he is my friend. And if you can remember that, you let a lot of little stuff go that you ordinarily wouldn't let go. And you wonder, like I keep saying, we need for Monroe to survive. That's really important. And when he's talking about that, I want Monroe to thrive. And if Monroe's going to thrive, I got to give some, and he's got to give some into this relationship. Because if I get my way, he's going to be out the door. Because he doesn't agree with me most of the time. We have disagreements about a lot of stuff. Another thing that is so important, that is really important to look at, is don't ever forget to continue your personal recovery. You know, when you get into a relationship, if you don't continue all your codependency recovery, the relationship probably will not make it. And that's what really happens. We get sort of inclusive with another person, we hook into them, and then we don't do our own recovery. I needed to go back and keep working on my history with my mom and my dad and all my siblings and all the offenders, and he has to do the same thing. There's an interesting thing that happens when you're in a relationship and you're doing something, and all of a sudden a huge feeling comes up in you, like a huge feeling. You don't even know where the heck it came from. It's a huge feeling of rage or so much pain or so much fear comes up, an intense, overwhelming feeling. That feeling has nothing to do with today. Unless you are being violated in a major way, which we're assuming in your primary relationship that's not going on, all those huge feelings are still about your childhood. And for the first 7 years of our relationship, I reacted and responded too curly about all my old feelings. And today, if I have a huge feeling about anything going on in our relationship, I stop, I leave the situation, and I find out what it's about. Or I have the feeling, but not with him. Because he doesn't deserve rage or all those overwhelming feelings, because they're not about him. And that's why the divorce rate's so high. That's why we can't do relationships, because we keep bringing in all the garbage. And I still have to work on all my garbage. What happens, this is what I believe happens. I believe that I need to see my own life spark. I need to see that Barbara is worthwhile and precious and a wonderful person with all my faults and character defects. And as I'm learning to do that, my life spark shines. And then I can share my life spark with Curly. And then we can have a relationship that is full of joy and spontaneity and wonderful times, and also painful times, and we work as a team. But if I do my own personal recovery and I see my and I do my own life spark shining, then I can share it with him, because he can't do that for me. He'll never be able to give me my life spark. I have to do that myself. So your personal recovery is so important that you do it and then you share it with your mate. They don't do it for you.
I want to close by telling you a few personal beliefs of mine. Belief number one is you can have a functional relationship. As a therapist, and as a lot of you out there that I know personally and know that you're involved in therapy, we spend a lot of time looking at dysfunction and a lot of time getting our history straight and a lot of time finding out, quote unquote, what's wrong. What I really want to challenge you to do tonight is start looking at what's right in that relationship, what's really right. Just by virtue of you being here, you have a lot going for you, one hell of a lot going for you. The largest gift that Barbara has given me is joy, and she taught me that I didn't know anything about joy until I entered this relationship. And the gift that I gave Barbara, because I got her in touch with her pain, which are two very powerful gifts. I support you in doing something. Really doing something. After the initial part of the relationship is over, when you see each other's life spark and the limerence is over with, what is required in relationships among recovering people is work. You have to get to work. A lot of us, myself included, used to believe in the old Doris Day, Rock Hudson, off into wherever they were going, and most of us went through some grief and some shattering when we found out that what we saw wasn't really happening at all. Yeah. So I support you in doing something. I do believe that you can have wonderful relationships in recovery. And you know, for a long time in my recovery, I was programmed that was not the truth. For a long time in my recovery, I was programmed that a lot of relationships and 12-step programs just do not make it. And I believe you can. And I believe it's possible to be happy and continue on with your own recovery. If you're willing to work and if you're willing to go through your feelings. I know when Barb and I started at the turning point, changing this relationship around, a pain started coming out of me that I did not know existed. And fear started coming out of me that I did not know existed, about how afraid I had always been in relationships and didn't know how to tell her I was afraid. So I'd like to thank you for coming, and I'd like to thank you for letting us share, and go out and do it. Thank you.